So I'm Father Michael Sherwin. It's a joy for me to be here back in this pulpit. I grew up in the Archdiocese, but I've lived most of my Dominican life overseas, first teaching at the University of Freiburg in Switzerland, and now starting my fourth year at the Angelicum University of St. Thomas in Rome. But during the summers, I try to get home back to the Bay Area. And this theme today, the theme of St. Monica and the as one who shed many tears for the conversion of her son. During the following 3 days, we are going to consider how the teaching that we just heard in this portion of chapter 7 of the Sermon on the Mount from Matthew's Gospel, how the reality that the Father is a generous Father, the Father who is in heaven, gives good things to those who ask for them, how this was experienced in one family's life, in the family of Saint Monica, whose son was the future Saint Augustine. Over these 3 days, we'll first look at the life of Saint Monica, who she was, where she came from, what her hopes and aspirations were, and how the Lord ultimately answered her prayers for the conversion of her wayward son. We shall also consider how Monica's fidelity to prayer not only led to her son's conversion, but also changed her, led to her own deeper conversion. She became a different person over her years of faithful prayer. She became a saint. She started out as a Christian, and she grew into sanctity. Next, we should look at how St. Augustine, the son of so many tears, himself became an expert on the nature of prayer, especially intercessory prayer. The occasion was the sacking of Rome, where so many people in the empire had their faith in their vision of what it meant to be a Christian, shaken, profoundly shaken. And they appealed to him. Another noble Christian, literally a noble Christian, she came from one of the noblest families of Rome, Proba, will seek Augustine out. And so we'll look and see how Augustine responds to this refugee from Rome who came to North Africa, how he responds to her questions about the nature of prayer. And this will lead us, as it led Augustine, to the great prayer, the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer, that will lead us to see the true character of intercessory prayer. So, in this way, Monica and Augustine will lead us to encounter the Lord more deeply, and to encourage us to pray more fervently, but also more wisely, with prayers animated by a lively faith, a patient hope, and a compassionate charity. So that's our itinerary of the next 3 days. So we begin with Monica. The name, although you can find on the internet lots of fanciful etymologies of the name, trying to say that it's Latin or Greek, but actually it's Berber, Punic, as they were known in that area. She was born in the Maghreb area of North Africa in what's now Algeria at Thagaste in 332. That explains a lot about the character of this Christian family that she was born into. She was born during the reign of Constantine the Great. He was still, towards the end of his reign, but he was still making the empire a place that was receptive to Christianity. Christianity had come to North Africa in the first century. It had taken root, and she came from one of those Berber families that had embraced the faith, but also had been Latinized. So although she could speak her native tongue, a form of Punic, a form of Berber, she aspired for greater things for herself and for her family, and she was a Latin speaker, marrying into a prominent local family. Her husband was one of the part of the ruling elite of the local town. A difficult man, a pagan. They had three children together, Augustine, and then another son and a daughter. The daughter would go on to become an abbess. We don't often hear about her. Those three children, but Augustine, the firstborn, was the child of predilection, the one that was intellectually gifted and her favorite. Yes, parents do have favorites. She became devoted to her son's spiritual but also intellectual development. He received the best education that North Africa could give. North Africa had become the breadbasket of the Roman Empire. It was a bustling area, much commerce, and as often happens for those who are born and raised in the periphery, the aspirations to get ahead. And she was part of that, as a solicitous mother, wanting her son to succeed, but also wanting him to be a good Christian. And Augustine, and we know almost everything we know about Monica, we get from Augustine. Augustine talks about how his early childhood, even though his father was difficult and not a Christian, he had drunk deeply from the teaching and example of his mother. He was a pious Catholic. But full of ambition and wonder, he went to Carthage, the great bustling city, not too different from San Francisco, a port city with all of its strengths and weaknesses, a university town. He went there at the age of 16, 17, he may have turned 17 when he arrived there. And very quickly, the formation he received as a child began to recede. First, he took on a concubine, a Punic speaker, probably not a Latin speaker. Augustine could speak his native tongue, Punic. And they have a son together, a Deodatus. So already not choosing the way that his mother and father had mapped out for him. Soon after his arrival in Carthage, his father dies. So at 17, he then, only a few years later, he becomes a Manichae. So not only is he not living the morals of the Catholic Church, he's also fallen away from the teachings of the church. At 19, he's joined one of these strange religions. And then, in order to get away from the overbearing influence of his mother, he tells his mother that he's going to go say goodbye to a friend who's sailing off, and he sails away. Goes off to Rome. For 15 years, she prayed for his conversion. We should think about that. 15 years. He was living in a way that was not what you would call according to the Christian life. Drawn up into the crazy ideas of the Manichaeans, that there were two gods, an evil God that created matter, a good God that created spirit, and that the wars inside himself were explained by these cosmic wars between good and evil. It kept him in thrall just as long as his passions kept him enslaved. Now, the story doesn't end there. He was converted. At the pinnacle of his own academic and civil career, he becomes a member of the Roman court in Milan. and he's drawn to the faith. Now, Monica does not give up during these many years of prayer. She actually tracks him down, takes the very dangerous trip from Tagus to Carthage to Milan, putting her life in danger on land and at sea. And her efforts are rewarded. There are a few vignettes. He tells us that he leaves many things out, but there are a few vignettes that can offer us a model. I think the Lord chooses some people to be a model more dramatically of what is true for all Christians who pray for loved ones. Here's something that Augustine says in his Confessions. He's speaking to the Lord, confessing to the Lord in this elegant Latin, but he says, "My mother, your faithful servant, wept for me before you more than mothers weep when lamenting their dead children. By the faith and spiritual discernment which she had from you," again, he's addressing God the Father, "she perceived the death which held me. And you heard her, Lord. You heard her and did not despise her tears, which poured forth to wet the ground under her eyes in every place where she prayed. You heard her." The first little glimmer of hope came in a dream. You have to be a part of a people that believes in the power of dreams to receive such things. But she had a dream. And in the dream, she's crying over the wayward life of her son Augustine when a young man comes up to her and says, "Why are you crying?" And she explains, and the young man says to her, "Where you are, he will one day be." So she was greatly consoled by this and went off to tell her son. This is when he was still in Tagaste. He'd come back to get Tagaste to teach before running away to Rome. And Augustine turned it completely around, saying, "Oh, well, this just means that you too one day will become a Manichaean." And Augustine said that he was more struck than by her report of this dream, than by what really struck him was the vehemence of her response to him. She said, without skipping a beat, "No, no, the young man said, where I am, you will one day be, not that I will be where you are." And that hit him, but it would take another 10 years before it would have effect. But the story that gives the title of these talks occurs when she was asking a priest, a bishop, a local North African bishop, to engage in debate with Augustine. She felt that Augustine was smarter. She intuited that Augustine was smarter than this crazy group that he was running around with, and that if he would only engage, if this bishop would only engage Augustine in debate, he would see the errors of his ways. And the bishop, as Augustine says, wisely said, "No, it would do no good to engage your son in debate. First, he's too taken up in his own arrogance by this new teaching. And also, he's not yet disposed to receive it. Let him stay where he is." Well, Monica wouldn't accept this. Like the persistent widow in the Gospels, she kept on haranguing the bishop. And the bishop finally says to her, "Go away from me. As you live, it cannot be that the son of so many tears shall perish." Now, she would later tell Augustine that she felt that this had been almost a prophetic utterance, even though it was said by an annoyed and rather nasty bishop, who, by discretion, Augustine does not name. "Go away from me. As you live, it cannot be that the son of so many tears shall perish." The call, therefore, to persevere in prayer. So what happens? Augustine, again, was smarter than the crazy ideas of the Manichees, but he was prostrate before his passions. And there's that famous encounter in the garden in Milan where he had been, he had heard the story from the life, Athanasius's life of Anthony, of the two Roman officials who go into a home that had kind of like the coffee table edition of Athanasius's, of the conversion of St. Anthony on the coffee table there. And they open it up and they read, and one of the officials says to the other, "What is it that we're doing after all that we work for?" These people were basically secret agents for the emperor. We try to rise up in the court, and every time we get higher up in the court, the more perilous it is. We spend our lives trying to be the friend of the emperor, but if we convert right now, we can become friends of God. Why are we pursuing all this craziness? And it so touched Augustine, this story, that he wanted to become a friend of God, but he can't. So he goes out into the courtyard to weep in this garden his sorrows, and he famously hears a little girl on the other side of the wall doing a little childhood ditty, but he suddenly realizes he's never heard these words before sung in a children's song. Tole lege, tole lege, take and read, take and read. And he falls upon, again remembering Athanasius's life of Anthony, who opened up the Gospels and just by random started to read. Augustine opens up the Bible and starts to read from Romans. And it leads to his conversion, the grace of conversion. And so Monica and he have about 6 months of consolation. He tries to live as a noble Roman out on estates doing dialogues on deep subjects, and he always gives his mother the voice of wisdom in these dialogues. And his son, his brilliant son, Adeodatus, has now reached his maturity. She'll be dead within 6 months. The transformation over Monica, as we'll see in the next 2 days, is profound. She went from being someone very much based in the local traditions of North Africa, with very much a certain vision of what Augustine should become. He should marry well into a prominent family, and he should start his life and career in North Africa. None of those plans work out. The woman that he chose for he never married. He doesn't become a local official in Tagaste. But what does work out is beyond her dreams, her wildest dreams. And she has at Ostia, which is the port of Rome, on the coast there in the Mediterranean, she has a vision of things to come, where her true home is, that she has helped Augustine orient his life toward. And so they have a moment together of mystic vision, where she is ready to go. And she, at this point, as a sign that she's been liberated from her previous way of seeing things, she says, "Bury me here." She's buried almost on a roadside. Her tomb wouldn't be found again until 1946, 45, 46, when two boys were setting up a basketball hoop. They find the memorial grave to her. And so she's transformed. Not only is her son brought to the faith, but she herself becomes a saint. Now it raises questions, and we'll end today with this. Why is it that the Lord seems to answer some prayer and not others? Why is it that people can pray for years for something that they seemingly don't receive? I have friends who had a whole symphony of saints praying for the daughter, a beautiful young daughter who had just graduated from college, who quickly, very quickly, devastatingly died of cancer. Where was the Lord in that? And so we have to look at the nature of intercessory prayer and what it is we think we're doing. Clearly, the Lord calls us to pray, calls us to ask good things of him. Paul asks us to pray. So does James, so does Peter, for one another. What does this mean? It's to that that we'll turn tomorrow as we look more closely at how Augustine, the son of so many tears, reflected on the nature of prayer.